Welcome to The Mountain Life. I'm Mary Beth Maziarz.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peak. Our guest this morning spent more than 25 years as a floor nurse working in the ER, trauma units, cardiac cath lab, ICU, and treating underserved communities in Haiti, in Guatemala, and Cambodia, before deciding to take the next step and become a nurse practitioner.
But Ellen Brown's journey had just begun. Once in practice, she discovered there were a number of healthcare issues and approaches that she wanted to do differently. And so she founded Stacy Wellness right here in Utah. Ellen Brown, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
You have Stacy Wellness. Where did that name come from? Is Stacy a person or a place, or where is that from?
So Stacy was a person back in the 4th century. She was a martyr for Christ, and she was actually Saint Anastasia. And I created Stacy Wellness Center in honor of her because she was a healer. She was known as the Saint of Potions, which was the pharmacist of her time. And she went around healing people, and she served a life of giving and healing. And I wanted my practice to be a reflection of her.
That's wonderful. Well, so many of the earliest healers were women. They were the caretakers and the herbalists, and that history is a wonderful thing to acknowledge. What kind of health concerns are most addressed in your practice?
So I started out simply doing hormone replacement. It was very part-time in addition to my full-time job. And there were a lot of other issues that came up that my patients asked me to help them with, such as weight loss. And then the aesthetics that came with the weight loss, because then there was sagging skin and all of that. So it just kind of blossomed into what it is today. I do a lot of weight loss. Much of it is with GLP-1s, but not all. There are lots of modalities that can be used for weight loss, but it does go hand in hand with hormone balancing, because sometimes we get stuck in our weight loss journey and we reach a plateau, and then we have to address what else is causing the weight loss plateau. And then we can look at the hormones and lifestyle and diet and activity and things of that nature.
Ellen, it's funny. I've never been, you know, a person that was constantly looking to lose weight, although I've always been like many women. I don't know if it was our generation or something, but, you know, my mom was always talking about how many calories something was. And I think we all kind of grew up in that tradition where it was, you know, very much on the forefront of our thought. But more recently, I've looked at sort of this metabolic wellness, whether it's speeding up your metabolism, increasing strength, tailoring the way you eat throughout the day. Like, here I am, all these decades later, of feeling like I know a lot about diet, nutrition, exercise, where someone told me, you know what, get some protein first thing in the morning, first 30 minutes after you wake up, and it will help kind of jumpstart your metabolism and do all these things that are right versus wrong, which is, you know, starting with carbohydrates or sugar or whatever it is. Could you just give us an overview of, you know, all these things put together? What do you think the biggest mistakes maybe that we're making, or the biggest myths that we have as women in the way we ought to approach diet and nutrition? Boy, that was a long question. Sorry.
No, that's okay. I think the biggest mistake we make is that it's a one-size-fits-all solution, because not everybody is the same. Intermittent fasting may work for somebody, but if somebody is on a GLP-1, intermittent fasting is absolutely the wrong way to go, because we don't want to restrict that protein in the morning. So by saying everybody should do this or everybody should do that, that is the problem. We're all different. We all have different metabolisms and issues that we're dealing with.
Yeah. And so how do you go about figuring out what that one thing is for each individual patient? What are the tests? Do you do, I don't know, food sensitivity tests or metabolic tests? What do you do?
So a lot of it is just talking and asking patients, what have you tried? What has worked? What hasn't worked? Then also we can look at labs. We can look at a hemoglobin A1C and see if there's maybe diabetes, or we're getting to pre-diabetic stage, or you know, what exercises are you doing? Are you working out too much? If you're overtraining, that's going to increase your cortisol levels, which makes you gain weight. So even though you're doing everything right and you're overtraining and you're increasing your cortisol levels, then, you know, we need to back that off. So a lot of it is history taking, any surgeries, any health problems that you're dealing with. Sometimes it's thyroid problems, Hashimoto's. There's just so many things to extract from the patient in the conversation that will guide our treatment.
Sure. Well, you mentioned that just talking or listening to the patient is an important part of the process. And you have a high awareness of that. How important is that talking and listening in your role as a provider compared to what somebody might see in a typical doctor visit?
Well, first of all, I want to preface by saying it's not their fault. Physicians, nurse practitioners, everyone in healthcare, we all want to do what's right for our patients. But because of the constraints of insurance and the low reimbursement rates, we have to get as many people through as possible to get as much reimbursement in as we can in 1 hour. We have to see a lot of patients. So it's not their fault. As far as my approach in listening, it is so, so important. There were times when, you know, I would meet with my provider for 5 minutes and on the way out the door, they tell me, oh, you're fat, you need to lose weight. Well, that's why I came. I came because I need help. So just feeling like I was heard, even if my provider didn't have the answers, I felt like I was heard and, you know, somebody who took the extra time that I needed to talk about the issues that I was having. And sometimes I didn't even know the issues I was having until they asked me the right question. So I think that that's probably the most important thing, is asking the right questions.
Sure. And before we go any further, I do want to mention that none of our discussion today is meant to imply medical advice, that you need to talk with your own practitioners and make sure that they know your history and your situation specifically.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about bioidentical hormone replacement therapy. This can be life-changing for people. Years ago, a lot of people got skittish about it because they had discovered there were some ties to increased risk of breast cancer and some other issues. Where are we now with hormone replacement therapy?
Yes. So there has been a lot of information that has come out very recently that we know that it's not a blanket statement that if you go on hormone replacement therapy, you're going to get breast cancer, or you're going to get blood clots. So that is now blanketly off the table. Now, there are risks, some people, that have to be mitigated, but, you know, it's no longer a blanket statement. And when a woman goes through perimenopause and on to menopause, we can individually look at the patient and decide with the patient what is the best approach to replace the declining hormones to have a reduced risk of osteoporosis and dementia and cardiovascular disease and strokes, because we now know that there are benefits to estrogen. Now, I say estrogen as because everyone knows what estrogen is. Mm-hmm. But the term estrogen can mean bioidentical or the synthetics. So there's a lot more information that we have now, and we know that it is beneficial for health overall to replace the estrogen and testosterone. Women have a small amount of testosterone. I frequently hear something is wrong, but I don't know what it is. I can't put my finger on it. I don't know. And in talking and also doing labs, I usually find out that it's a hormone imbalance, and frequently it's low testosterone.
Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. Well, no two hormone replacement therapies are alike. You know, they are as diverse as we are individuals, it seems. How do you break into categories, you know? I guess I've talked to doctors before about hormone replacement therapies, and they want to be very aggressive with, like, either injecting testosterone or putting pellets of testosterone, and you know, really, it's almost like this other category of hormone replacement therapy. And so I think for women who are a little worried about how they want to approach it, how do you advise them on those different levels of intensity?
So I will just ask them, what have you tried in the past? And if none, then we can go as conservative or as aggressive as they would like. I don't do pellets. I am not a fan of pellets. Maybe somebody will change my mind sometime, but I had an adverse reaction to a pellet. And once the pellets are in, they're in. You don't take them out, and you just have to suffer with it for the next 3 to 4 months. So, you know, there's topicals. A daily topical testosterone is an option. And I do like the topical testosterone because if I feel like maybe my dose isn't quite right, I do have the option of skipping a day if I need to and calling my provider and saying, okay, I need to adjust this a little bit. And so then we can, you know, come up with another plan or another dose. So I like having that daily control over the dose.
And hormones are such a fluctuating thing. So I do understand the convenience of the implants and pellets and things like that. It sounds wonderful to not have to think about it, but the body is an organism. It's moving, it's changing, it's metabolizing. Things are different. So it makes sense to me that you'd want that ability to be responsive to what your body's doing. And
yes,
you were talking earlier about weight loss. GLP-1 drugs are a big deal. They have been a miraculous health advancement for many, many people. How can we make sure that if you're on a GLP-1 drug, you're doing it in the most healthful way?
The most healthful way is to find a provider who will help you with your daily caloric intake and the kinds of things that you're eating, not just calories, but the kinds of food that you're eating, your nutrition, your lifestyle. The best way to go about GLP-1 weight loss is to have a plan in place that while you're losing weight, you are having some coaching to change your lifestyle that caused the weight gain in the first place. It's not always your fault. I've been there. I have been stuck. I've lost over 100 pounds myself.
Wow.
I have been there, and I understand it. When you're on the GLP-1s, protein has to be first priority, because if you're not getting enough protein, you're going to lose muscle mass. And somebody who is not eating enough, especially protein, in 10 or 15 years, you know, there's a possibility if they've lost enough muscle mass and they're not keeping the muscle by exercising, they could end up, you know, needing mobility aids later on. So my goal is to make sure that you are eating enough protein, you are getting the micronutrients, so the vitamins, minerals, and everything, so that your body has everything that it needs to stay healthy while you're losing the weight.
Well, we are just scraping the surface, but we're speaking this morning with nurse practitioner and founder of Stacy Wellness, a new, well, somewhat new clinic in Orem that especially highlights highly responsive healthcare. Nurse practitioner Ellen Brown, thank you so much for being with us on the program this morning.
Oh, thank you very much. I've enjoyed it.